James from SurvivalPunk.com. Back with another amazing episode on this chilly day. Yay, it's finally cooling off. It's almost my, well, almost my favorite time of the year. The weather's getting a little funky here, where I don't have to really run heat or cooling. It's that perfect inside the house temperature that doesn't need any maintaining. Sometimes I run my heater just a little bit, but I'm pretty comfortable around 60 degrees inside. You know, men dress appropriately for the weather, unlike women, where, you know, I'm wearing sweatpants and a hoodie. Women would sit around in a sports bra and their underwear and say, "It's chilly in here." Well, yeah, you should put clothes on. Just teasing the ladies. But yeah, so this week we're going to tackle a history subject. I love history, and I did quite a bit of research for this, and while doing the research, realized that this could be a much longer podcast and probably a multiple part podcast. Speaking of the Great Depression, so it's a huge, huge topic, and this podcast is going to scratch the surface. And that's about all that we can hope to do in this podcast is scratch the surface. And I didn't even get to go into any of the crazy conspiracy theories that surround the Great Depression. And some of them are pretty good, and some of them are probably right. You know, like pretty much every conspiracy theory, to make a good one, you've got to have a couple grains of truth in there. And, you know, some of them are completely true. Some of the things people think are conspiracy theories are not conspiracy theories. But there are some good ones on the Great Depression. And that could be a whole episode. You know, we haven't done a crazy conspiracy theory episode in a while. And they're kind of fun to do. They're kind of fun to tackle some of them. So maybe that's in the future book somewhere. I don't know. You know, I'm always up for good suggestions for podcasts. James@survivalpunk.com. So before we get into the Great Depression, which is what a bad naming convention there. The Great Depression. No, there should be like, I don't know. It was great as in scope of things, but not great as in, oh, that's great. So yeah. You have questions for the Survival Punk podcast or questions, suggestions, comments, you can send me a voicemail. Well, you can call me and leave a voicemail. And the number to do that is 615-657-9104. That is 615-657-9104. Call and leave a question. And you can always email me if you have like recording software like this and your phone service is sketchy, then by all means record it and then email it to me, james@survivalpunk.com. That works too. Not often have I had calls where the reception was bad and it was like, I don't know what they're saying, you know, and sometimes people get a little flustered and they don't want to, you know, they stumble with their words, which I, as a professional podcaster, never do. You know, they stumble with their words and can't get it out. So make sure you know what you're going to say, have it planned out, call, knock out the question. Next, if you want a free sticker, and I still have some Survival Punk stickers, rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. I don't even know if we have any reviews on Stitcher. So just rate and review us on iTunes. That's the big one. That helps out a lot. And send me an email, james@survivalpunk.com, with the username that you use to make the review so I can verify it, and your shipping address so I can mail you your sticker. And I will promptly get that in the mail, and you'll get a free sticker, and that helps out. Patreon. The Survival Punk Army is on Patreon now. In an effort to branch out from the self-ran Survival Punk Army, and for lower-tier sort of support mechanisms. Some people want to support the show, but say $5 a month is too much, or whatever. Then you can join Patreon, patreon.com/survivalpunk, and chip in for like $1 a month, which is pretty much nothing, but helps run the show. It is a project of passion more so than a profitable one. I do it because I love it, and I'm just too fucking stupid to quit doing it. So that's why there's a podcast every week. Even when, you know, like today, I had to get up a few hours early, do some show prep, record the podcast, and do this because I like doing this. But supporting the hard built-in costs, like, you know, I had to upgrade servers recently because of Google, you know, not that you guys care, but Google's cracking down on sites that don't have SSL, so I had to upgrade my server to get a SSL certificate on the site, which means I might actually have a 1-800 number for you people that want to call toll-free, even though I don't even... Do cell phones even charge long distance for states anymore? I don't think they do. I think you can call pretty much anywhere for free now. But, so yeah, it just helps run the cost of the show. And in case I haven't said it recently, to all you Survival Punk Army members, Matt, Jeff, Melanie, Will, Daniel, Ed, Buddy, love you guys. You're the best. You definitely help make sure that the show comes out every week. And with that, there is a Survival Punk Army, so that's there as well if you want to join. Let's get into the show. I have a feeling it may be long. Maybe. The Great Depression. So, somehow, if you did not go to school and you've never heard of the Great Depression, it lasted from 1929 to pretty much 1941 when World War II kicked off. And if you go super simplistic, people will say that the Great Depression happened when the stock market crashed, the Black Tuesday as it's known. But it's not quite that simplistic at all. And there are probably even more circumstances, more causes than what I'm even going to talk about. I'm talking about sort of the top list and of what caused it and what kept it going and what really affected it. Yeah, like I said, there are conspiracy theories like the Rockefellers basically cheating the stock market with the Federal Reserve Bank to create the crash, to make money, and then possibly it got out of control. Conspiracy theory. Although I'm sure there's truth in that. We're going to deal with the hard facts today. And if you got some good conspiracy theories, drop them in the comments. Let me know. I would love to check out what you guys have seen. So yeah. September 4th, 1929, the Depression started in the United States after a major stock after a major fall in stock prices that began around September 4th, 1929, and became worldwide news with the stock market crash of October 29th, 1929, known as Black Tuesday. And it wasn't just Black Tuesday. There was like a, it was pretty much a black week. Like there was Black Thursday was pretty bad. It's not the sole cause, but it was, that kicked it off. That's a good signal for when it really began. Although it was happening, you know, it was happening for a few months. So yeah, and like everything, there was a boom before that. So the market had reached record highs that summer and had begun to decline in September. Let's see. So on this Black Thursday, on Thursday, October 24th, the market plunged at opening bell, causing a panic. Investors managed to halt the slide. Just 5 days later, on Black Tuesday, the market crashed, losing 12% of its value, wiping out $14 billion of investments. 2 months later, stockholders had lost more than $40 billion. Even so, this is in 1929 money. I severely doubt that they're adjusting this for inflation, these numbers. So just imagine, you know, $40 billion in today money. I can probably look that up in a second. Even though the stock market regained some of its losses by the end of 1930, the economy was devastated and America truly entered what is called the Great Depression. Yeah. So, there's a couple things about the stock market crash. At that time, and I don't even know if it's been rivaled today, but at that time, more people than ever before were playing with the stock market. They had made it super easy for everybody to get into it, which is the reason why it was so high. Everybody, every kid, every mom, every dad, everybody was playing the stock market. For good or bad, you know, one of the bad parts of that, you know, like if you have money, playing with stocks can be fun and profitable. You know, I've done it in the past, kind of gotten out of it, for a lot of reasons. I'm just not really feeling having my money in the stock market very much right now. I may need to check though. I had a couple fractions of a stocks left in like my E-Trade or Scottrade account, and I just let them sit there because it wasn't even enough to cash out, and I didn't care. Much like I had money in Bitcoin that I think is now, well, I transferred money to a Bitcoin site that is dead. So I lost all that money. I mean, granted at the time it was like $20, but that's when Bitcoin was trading at 1,000, not like 7,000 like it is now. So yeah, whatever. You know, you play with money, expect that it's gone. And if you make a profit, yay. And if you don't, the money's gone anyway. So, and that was a pure play. So, another one of the big factors driving the stock market was the ease. And so, a big thing going on, and you can do it today, but then it was probably worse, a lot worse, was to buy on credit, installment plans. We're going to talk about that in a second. There is a term for it, but I don't remember. It eludes me. So, yeah. Basically, people were making down payments to buy large sums of stock and then making payment plans on the stock they bought, which is, yeah. So a lot of people that don't really understand markets, they don't really understand what they're even doing. They're like, it's like, hey, Joe Schmo, you should go buy some stock in Survival Punk because it's a good company and I think it's going to blow up. So they do that, and they don't even have the money to buy the stock. They're borrowing the money to buy the stock and then make payments on that money that they borrowed to buy the stock. So when the stock prices crashed, everybody lost their money, and they didn't actually own it. So they were supposed to be making payments on it, and they didn't have money to make the payments because they just lost all their money. So, I mean, it almost sounds so crazy that your mind is like, margin is buying on margin. That's the word. But yeah, it's almost so crazy that your mind has a hard time even wrapping around it. Like, what? So yeah, you got to think all of these big name investors and wealthy people who had their money in the stock market, because that's what wealthy people do. They wisely invest their money. All of these people lost their money. $40 billion. I mean, that wasn't $40 billion of, you know, John D. Rockefeller money. That was $40 billion of a lot of rich people and every common person out there, because they all had their money tied up in the stocks. Doubly so because of the banks, and we'll talk about that in a bit. Oh, I get worked up when I talk about crazy like that. So yeah, the stock market crash caused the bank failures. Nearly 700 banks failed in the month at the end of 1929, and more than 3,000 banks collapsed in 1930. FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance, was unheard of. Instead, when banks failed, people lost their money. Others panicked, caused bank runs as people desperately withdrew their money, forcing more banks to close. By the end of the decade, more than 9,000 banks had failed. Surviving institutions, unsure of the economic situation and concerned for their own survival, stopped lending money. Okay, so there's a whole lot here. Okay, so when you put your money in a bank, they don't just take all of your money and everyone else's money and throw it back in the vault and let it sit there. Because even though banks usually tend to rape us with charges, fees, all sorts of stuff to make money as a business, you know, businesses have to make money. That's actually just icing on the cake for them. Banks will take your money and the fees they make from lending money. Banks will take your money, and I think they reserve like 10% of it or something. I'm not going to get deep into this whole topic because it's super crazy and would make the show run really long. But they take... They reserve a portion of it and then take the remainder of it to go invest in things. They put it in the stock market. They use that money to lend to other people. And now most of that's all done with basically strokes in a computer and a ledger. Back then, probably just, you know, a written ledger. But yeah, they don't actually keep very much of the total amount of money on the books in the bank. It's pretty much all gone, lent out to other people, invested to make more money, stuff like that. So not much of it is actually in the bank, which of course means that if a good portion of the people go to get their money out of the bank, they don't have the money to give to you. It's tied up in, you know, bullshit. I mean, really, it's tied up. It's loaned out to other people. Probably, not going to get into it. There's some really shady stuff that the banks can do with, like, loaning more amount of money than they have taken in. And it gets really crazy. Not going to go into it today. Not going to go into it. So, yeah. With a lot of, and, you know, before federal insurance on the banks, federal deposit insurance, FDIC, that's what that means. That's why we have FDIC. Before that, you know, if the town all went to the Survival Punkville Bank and we're like, hey, we want our money out. We have a life savings in here and we heard shit's going south. We want our money back. Okay, you know, how many people can you give the money back to before you literally don't have any money? It's either tied up in loans you've given to their neighbors who are also looking to get their money back, or, you know, you've invested it in bonds and treasuries and stocks and other things to bring back money while the money's sitting there anyway, especially for things like long-term savings, like this, you know. You know, and it gets to the point where they're like, fuck, we don't have any money, you know, so they can't do business. They can't stay open like every other business. They fail. And at that time, a bank failing means that if you had money in there and you didn't get it out, it's gone. I mean, I don't know if there was ever any, payback on. I don't know if there was ever any way for people to ever to get their money back. It seems like there could have been a lawsuit. I don't know. You know, like the banks are gone. Could they even sue people? That needs to be retributions on that. But yeah, I don't think there was. I think if you had money in the bank during the Great Depression and the bank failed and you didn't get your money out, that's it. You never got your money back. Correct me if I'm wrong. In my research, I never came across that. The banks failed. The money was gone. The government created FDIC to make sure that didn't happen again. That if you deposit your money, you can feel safe and secure that you will get your money back. During good times, if the shit hits the fan, don't count on getting your money back. I'm just saying, if the banks fail and the government fails, don't plan on getting your money back, guys. That's my two cents on that one. The other part of that, the banks being unwilling to lend, the ones that did survive the bank apocalypse. There's another conspiracy theory on that one by getting rid of competition by bigger banks, but we won't get into that. So yeah, now you have the banks that are left are spooked. They don't want to go out of business. And part of that is not lending money. So if they do just keep their money and not lend it, obviously, they will have their money and can't go out of business. So they're really hesitant on lending anyone money. Whereas before, we will talk about that in a bit. Before, they were willy-nilly on giving out loans to everybody. Remind you of anything? Oh, you don't have a job. Here, have this $400,000 loan to buy a house with. Okay. You can't pay it? No, I can't pay it. I don't have a job. You dumb fuck. Anyway. Oh, man. History repeats itself. in many, many different ways. So yeah, they're unwilling to lend money, which means that business expansion is halted. A lot of businesses run on credit, so they'll, same thing with like farms. Farms will buy their seed on credit, they will harvest it, and then when they make their money from selling of the harvest, they pay back the loan they got on the seeds and fertilizer. Well, you know, businesses will use it to buy widgets, and then when they sell the widgets, then they make money. It's a lot of businesses run that way. You know, I'm not a big fan of credit, but things like that, where you're running a business, it kind of makes sense to have debt in a business in some ways. You know, I've planning an episode on how to make side money for survival. One of the things I did was list items on eBay from basically Chinese manufacturers at a profit. And then when it sold, I took the money from the sale of the item to buy the item and have it shipped directly to the customer, so that I really never had to do any touching of freight, any touching of merchandise, goods. And, you know, I didn't actually own it. So it was convenient. Not quite the same thing, but kind of the same thing. And there was some success there. I mean, if you had a lot of free time, and I'll talk about that later because it's another episode, you know, stay-at-home moms could be doing this shit all day. I mean, if you just want to make a few extra bucks, it takes, you know, you can have like 100 listings on eBay, throw everything up there, and then as everything sells, add new ones, and then, you know, it's not really a whole lot of work, and you can make some money that way. Part of, you know, there's some other things to do, but yeah, that's the basic gist of it. If you really want to know more, look it up, shoot me an email, something like that. So yeah, with that made it hard for businesses to expand. So, you know, the big businesses that were buying stuff on credit had a hard time getting it. They couldn't expand their business. It sort of became a stagnant thing. And it started to make the economy problem worse. Like, you had the stocks crashing, you had the banks failing, and then now you can't get money to do business with. You know, it's a snowball effect here. It's like, not like one thing caused the Great Depression. It was a clusterfuck of a whole bunch of things. You know, the perfect storm. The perfect storm. Yeah. It's, you know, if we had had a few more things go wrong with the Great Recession, you know, we could have slid down that shit pile too. But we had a few things go right, you know, and as I keep going here, you'll see more snowballs and more, you know, how it's gaining steam here. Yeah, okay. So I skipped one. In the 1920s, growth was being built heavily on credit. Credit and what was called at the time was installment plans. That's what they're, oh, come get this old thing here. I'll get it on an installment plan. You don't need to pay the money. Get an installment plan, my friends. My 1920s voice. Which I'll be excited in a couple more years when we're in the rip-roaring 2020s. So then expect every single episode to be recorded like that. Stay here. Now stay here. Growth was built on credit. People were buying, not just like today, where, you know, there's a couple things people get on credit. And it makes sense in some of those cases. Like buying a new car. Won't even go into all my thoughts on that. But you know, it's a lot of money. It's usually out of the reach of most people to go buy a new car with cash. I mean, it would be better and in some ways cheaper, but you know, those big purchases, a house, a car, you know, they're bought on credit and you make payments on them. In the 20s, you know, in the 20s, people started buying everything with installment plans. Like, ridiculous. Not just big things, but, like, everything. It's like that friend you got, who everything they own comes from, like, Rent-A-Center. Pretty sure Rent-A-Center is everywhere. Everyone should know it. It's like an appliance store where you make a stupid small down payment, and then you make fucking weekly or bi-weekly payments of like a stupid amount, and you end up paying like four times as much, but you don't have to come up with it all at once. Instead of just saving and buying the thing, you just make tiny stupid payments. And to be honest, most of the time I see people lose them. I've seen more people lose things to Rent-A-Center than get. In some circumstances, I can see it being good, but not really, not really. I think you're better off getting used or saving your money, especially when, it was years ago, what was it, a PlayStation 3 or something? I was at Rent-A-Center with a friend of mine. I, of course, didn't get anything, and I don't remember if they did or not. I think it was something stupid, like they needed a fridge, so they went to Rent-A-Center and paid, I don't know, paid a lot of money. But I was looking at something like a PlayStation 3, which in the stores was like, we'll say $299. I don't remember. We'll say $299, and I'm pretty sure there it was like $200 more. It was literally that much more. But you're only paying like $16 a $20, $40 a month. You aren't paying that much a month. You're paying a tiny amount. But by the time that you would have got done paying it, you know, one, the system would be completely obsolete and useless. Well, useless. It's, you know, I still have my Sega Dreamcast, if any of you guys know game systems. greatest system ever made. But you know, pretty much you're wasting money buying it, and it's, you know, you're paying way too much. And in the 20s, people were doing crazy shit. Like, they'd get everything on credit, everything. So they weren't buying anything outright. They were buying everything on these installment plans because it was so cheap and so easy to get with no regard for the future, because times are great. They'll always be great. Oh, yeah. You know, so they'd go get a car. You know, like, would they have, like, five choices back then? They go get a car, and, you know, they're broke, so they can't make the payment next month. So they go sell their fridge or their stove or whatever. They go sell their fridge to make the payment on the car. And then they just get a new fridge on installment plan because it's that cheap. You know, it's cheaper to get one than pay the stupid installment plan that week on it. So they sell that, go pay the, you know, and they're just like, it's like building a tower of Lego blocks and pulling off the bottom to add to the top. You're getting kind of rickety here. So yeah, that, oh yeah. And when everybody lost their money in the stock market, how's anyone going to pay for this stuff? And so there was this huge surplus too. You know, going into it, the rip-roaring 20s, people were overproducing everything. Food, appliances, cars, TVs. Well, TVs? No. Old radio sets. They were overproducing everything. And then everyone became broke. And there's all this shit laying around. I mean, it's like Atari ET cartridges being dumped in the desert. Well, reading and watching about the Great Depression, I came across a tactic that the farmers used to make prices go up because there was so much stuff. It was so cheap that they couldn't make any money. It was less than what they were borrowing to make their crops grow and stuff. So in an attempt to drive up prices, they slaughtered 6,000 hogs. Now, I don't mean that they took 6,000 hogs to the slaughterhouse to make yummy bacon and delicious spiral cut hams. I mean, they just killed 6,000 hogs dead. The market is now 6,000 hogs less, meaning that the remainder of the hogs left to eat are now more expensive because they're rare. A waste of that much bacon just makes me want to like murder people. It's so, just wasting food like that during, you know, a time when people are starving. Just, it grinds my gears, folks. So yeah, I have always personally had an issue with credit. You know, I'm different from my generation. I don't know. I never went through that phase where like I was a, you know, young adult and I had a bunch of credit cards and I'm like, oh, I'm spinning up debt. And, you know, and I definitely wasn't raised this way. You know, my parents were like rent-a-center people. My parents had debt. I was born with something in me that like made me cringe in horror at debt from birth. You know, I've had debt in my life and I have gotten rid of it so quick. Just, like I feel like a burden every time. Like when I bought my brand new Kia C'D, it was a lot of money and the interest rate was crazy high. And I would have ended up paying a ton of money if I hadn't paid it off several years early, through hustling and basically throwing every dime I had at it. Like, you know, like I would have friends or I'd see deals on buying guns for really cheap. So I'd buy the guns really cheap and then I would sell them for a little bit more money. In some cases, a lot. Like when I bought a World War II M1 Garand for $250 and sold it for $1,400. Things like that. And just general working and then throwing all my money towards paying off the car got me out of the debt. But yeah, and we are probably worse off now. Well, we're bad off. I don't know if we're quite as bad as the Great Depression with buying on credit, but we're not in a good spot. I mean, we're definitely failing on that. And that's not even counting the whole college loan bubble. That thing's going to fuck some people up, guys. I'm not going to go into that, though. I really need to have a financial expert on the show. I need to do that. Oh, yeah. So, no spending. No spending. People were losing their jobs. Banks weren't lending money. Big rich people, lots of companies lost their money in the stock market crash. No one's really spending money anymore. So, you know, the growth of the 20s was built on spending, even though it was credit and installment plan based. This stuff starts happening. People start to freak out. Well, one, a lot of regular Joes lost their entire life savings. Not even going into the unemployment thing yet. So from the top down, people just stop spending money. There's a lot of, which, at the time, before that, there was a lot of overproducing of stuff like we were talking about. You know, there was a surplus of random junk. I keep wanting to say TVs. TV is my random junk making thing, and that doesn't apply for the 1920s. There's a lot of junk being produced, a lot of appliances. Now people don't have money. There's installment plans are pretty much gone out the window. You can't get shit on credit anymore. So merchandise is just sitting there, which means that they don't need to. Well, one, they're not really selling anything anymore. So they have an implus. They have a surplus. I just created a word. They have a surplus of inventory, an implus. They have an implus. So the need to make more when you already have too much and it's not selling kind of goes down. Which is one of the reasons the unemployment started to go up. And it went up a lot. At the height, the highest amount of unemployment in the Great Depression 10-year period span or so was like 25%. Really, that's what everyone quotes. It's really like 24.75. We'll say 25%. 25% unemployment, guys. Holy shit. The number of people unemployed was vast, and that's recorded documented level. So if you look at the unemployment now, there's a lot of squiggly wiggliness to go into it that alters the number. You know, like if people stop looking for work, oh, they're not unemployed anymore. They kind of are. Definitely. They kind of are definitely unemployed. If people have been out of work for a period of time, like more than like 2 years, they're drop them off that list. So I wonder what the true unemployment rate in the United States is. And that also doesn't count underemployed. So like, you know, at the end of 2008, when the Great Recession happened, you had people working way under what they're used to. I remember once interviewing a guy to do overnight janitorial floor crew service. And it was one of the best interviews I've ever had because the guy was a former district manager of like Best Buy. But the recession job, you know, kicked him out of a job. So now you have basically high-end white-collar people looking to get low-end blue-collar work. And then that jackass never showed up. He wanted to ride his unemployment a little longer. Anyway, and I don't like that. I don't like being out of work at all. And I think it looks better if you have something on your resume instead of, I see that you have been out of work for 2 years here. What have you done? You know, I've looked for another job. You haven't found anything in 2 years? Well, the economy downturned and, you know, I couldn't find a job consulting for, underwater basket weaving. Good luck. Good luck. So yeah, do you see how the snowball's going here? You know, companies are not producing things anymore. They need less people. These people, and that, like, there's a ton of people now without jobs. People without jobs don't spend money. Da-da-da-da-da. You know, it just keeps getting worse and worse. This is a fun topic. You know, talking about how horrible history was. I just like history, actually. I'm a fan of history. Let's see. Trade stopped. Oh, yeah. This is another big one. And I don't think I have the actual name pulled up right now. In an effort to make sure that Americans were making money. Government. I'm not even going to go into all the FDR things on this episode. That would make this like, this would be like a 5 hour long hardcore history episode if I went into FDR and all the policies he's made. you know, 40,000 foot level here, because I want to cover some other things at the end. Trade stopped. So they made crazy high tariffs, taxes on the importation of goods to incentivize Americans to produce goods and export them. Because taxes solve the problem. So the rest of the world countered with tariffs themselves, meaning nobody was trading. It stopped worldwide trade. And if you don't know, the way things are is the world now is basically ran on trade, for better or worse. You know, it has its benefits, and the world, needless to say, the world is ran on that. It needs trade to have the economy function in a normal capacity. You know, you get tomatoes from Mexico and you get olives from Spain, you know, and we send our steel and stuff to other parts of the world. Well, when every country in the world was imposing high tariffs on all of the goods, people stopped trading. You know, we just kept our shit. So then we couldn't sell our shit, and we weren't getting their shits, which means we weren't getting their stuff. You know, what little did come and go was not enough to help restart the destroyed economy. Mostly, things just sat around. You know, and at a time that everyone needed to be trading, no one was trading because it was too expensive. And that's not even counting it. Some point later on when FDR increased, well, maybe it was Hoover. It was Hoover and FDR. At the beginning of the recession, the taxes on the wealthiest was lowered to an all-time low. Lowered to what it was before. It was like 20% at the end. I think they jacked it up to like 86% or 60. You know, and that's not going to help. I mean, if you tax the riches, who are the business owners, they're just going to steal from the bottom to get themselves. Unless the government starts imposing things like, oh, you can't take wages and you can't fire people, and then you can't run a business. Anyway, so yeah, people stop trading. There's a, and that killed that, you know, one, you have, you know, trading fleets, boats and stuff that they're not working now. You've got the exportation people, the importation people, they're out of work. I mean, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And then you've got the cherry on top. You've got the Dust Bowl. Oh, the Dust Bowl. It's like being kicked when you're down. Like, I do think some of this, conspiracy theory alert, was sort of plotted by the banking industry and the rich elite. But I don't really, that would be next level, like, you know, evil genius here. I don't really think anyone planned on the Dust Bowl coming in and fucking everything up. Like, I think they wanted things to be pretty bad, but I didn't think they wanted things to be, oh shit, bad. Just saying. Conspiracy alert all over. So in the 1930s, states from Texas to North Dakota had a severe drought. This drought was caused by years of overgrazing, plowing, lack of rain, wind erosion. The result was a Dust Bowl, which occurred in many states in both the Southwest and Midwest. There was a lot of reasons for the Dust Bowl. The land became super dry. Topsoil erosion went through the roof, and you had these giant dust storms. There's dust everywhere. Nothing would grow. At a time when people need food the most, all of these crops are failing, and we have less food to feed them, which, of course, meant that food was probably going to be more expensive. Supply and demand. We've talked about that. I bet they wish they had those 6,000 hogs now. Just saying. And there was a lot of reasons for that. So the back-to-back homesteading acts gave people a ton of land and encouraged people to, you know, manifest destiny, to go out west and make homesteads and start farms. If you give away free shit, you have a bunch of people show up for it, and not everyone is really qualified. You know, if the government was like right now, like, oh, hey, we'll give you like 160 acres in the middle of the desert. Go have at it. You would have people that did that. And some of those people would try to farm, and they'd never farmed before, and they would be bad at it. Trial and error, some of them will get better. If you have that many people doing it that badly for that long, it's going to cause problems. I mean, granted, I don't think there should be regulations. By all means, you should try whatever you want. But when it's incentivized by a bunch of people that are getting land for free, that are just like, oh, I'll just try my hand at the farming thing. We'll give it a go. And destroy the land. You get results. So, you know, they were taking up this beautiful old prairie land with deep root systems, holding down the topsoil, plowed it all up. You know, we're putting in row crops on these giant open prairies. And, you know, it just wasn't holding down the topsoil. So one of the things the FDR did was start having farmers put in tree lines to be a windbreak so that you couldn't get wind blowing across these expansive fields, picking up all the topsoil and robbing it away. Trees stop the wind from blowing and give you breaks. So that's one good thing from FDR. I mean, he did some things. We'll not go into it. Not to mention the whole Pearl Harbor thing. That was all him. So yeah, it got real bad. You had the largest American migration ever with a lot of these Oklahoma and Arkansas, these Okies and Arkies, traveling west for the Golden Land or the Golden, what the, honey and milk land or something they called it. Yeah. And you get people out west going, we don't want you here. They were blocking roads and getting rid of them and, you know, just bad times. So yeah, you've got more people out of work because there's no farms to work. Then that was like a, you know, that was a big employer of people was the farms. Even though a lot of farms had gone mechanized with tractors and stuff in the expansion of the 1920s and earlier because of World War I and they needed more food output that they bought on credit that they couldn't make payments on anymore. Do you see this? Yeah. So yeah. The Dust Bowl, that definitely was an exasperating factor on the Great Depression, and I would call it sort of the final nail in the coffin, like, and it lasted about the same time as the Great Depression. It, you know, it pretty much ran out about the end. So, you know, and when we had some agriculture and forestry things put in place to protect and, to reverse the environmental damage that was done by bad farmers and, you know, lack of knowledge. So yeah, that's the podcast on what caused the Great Depression. We don't have time to really talk about how we got out of it, which was basically World War II. Production ramped up for World War II. That's what happened, and there's probably some other factors, and it could probably be a podcast. If you're interested in that, drop me a line, jamesfarrellpunk.com. I got a couple more things I want to talk about before I wrap it up. A couple of resources. So I'm going to have a link to another survival blogger. the survival mom, previously has been on the podcast. Nice lady. She had an article on 25 ways people made money during the Great Depression. So you hear lots of people in the Great Depression, and I really wanted to go more into that, like the actual stories of people from the Great Depression. But basically, you had a lot of odd jobs and stuff. Like, you didn't need money for a lot. What you did need money for, you had a hard time just going and getting a regular job. You know, and I'm not going to read through the whole list, but you had a lot of people just sort of do weird, odd jobs. Like, and we'll go into that in our time. I kind of feel like the economy's moving towards an odd job economy again, like a weird, the economy of the future is not going to be anything like what we've seen previously, or at least in the recent history. So to earn money, people caught and sold fish, clams, and crabs. Made homemade fudge and sold it. Sold newspapers on the corner. Kids earned a little extra money. They were promoted to corner captain. A sort of General Depression multi-level marketing scheme. Started a lunch truck wagon. Grew, picked, and sold berries. Road work. There was a lot of government programs created by FDR that needed workers, which is part of his plan. His New Deal. Shoveled snow on roads, multiple part-time jobs, including housekeeping. That's multiple part-time jobs. Instead of anyone being fully employed, they had lots of little jobs. Just general sort of side labor stuff. And another... So I want to talk about food a little bit. Some of the, and this also comes from the Survival Mom, but I don't have a link to, there'll be a book and a YouTube about a lady that survived the Great Depression, and, she would remake her foods and tell amazing stories of, like, being a little girl in the Great Depression and, like, you know, her and her dad going and getting berries from the spot they knew and stuff. So, you know, like, I think I remember her saying that she was never really hungry, but, you know, it wasn't really the best food. So let's go through a couple of these things that you would have ate on the Great Depression. Milk toast, chipped beef on toast. I believe you military guys call that shit on a shingle, which is delicious, by the way. Cucumber and mustard sandwiches. Mayonnaise sandwiches. Mayonnaise sandwiches. Actually, I think when I was... My grandmother was British, which affected some of my early childhood food. Unlike most of my friends here in the States, you know, we ate a lot of beans on toast growing up, which... is a pure British thing. And I didn't even realize that until I had grown up. I was like, wait, you haven't eaten beans on toast? Not everyone ate beans on toast. Pretty sure I ate mayonnaise on toast. Because that was the only two things I had at the time. There was bread and there was mayonnaise. Oh, toast it and put mayonnaise on it. Ketchup sandwiches. My older brother used to eat that. And I don't like ketchup anyway, so... Hot milk and rice, which just kind of sounds like a horrible poor man's rice pudding. I was like, is this a weird name for something? No. A couple of things you could have eaten during the Great Depression. Turtle. Gopher. Potato soup with water, not milk. Dandelion salad. Good survival resource there, guys. Lard sandwiches. I like lard. I think lard is great for a lot of things. I do not want to eat lard on a sandwich, though. Like, I'm okay with, like, cooking lots of things with lard. I'm not crazy on, like, I think lard is a good, healthy fat. But just eating it on a sandwich, or, okay, so... Bacon grease sandwich. I also don't want to eat a bacon grease sandwich. sugar sandwiches. I was telling Serenity about this. I was like, I don't even remember where I saw it, but I was like, hey, did you ever eat like bread, butter, and sugar when you were a kid? And like, we used to. Okay, so apparently I grew up in the Great Depression, guys. You would spread butter on a piece of bread and then sprinkle sugar on it and make a sandwich out of it. I've done that. Hot dogs and baked beans. Roadkill. I've not done that. One-eyed Sam, toad in the hole, basically. Piece of bread, cut a hole in it, put an egg on it in the center. Oh, piece of bread with an egg over easy on the center. So this is not with the hole cut in it. Oatmeal mixed with lard. Fried potatoes and hot dogs. There's a lot of hot dogs eaten in the Great Depression. That one lady, Clara, had a lot of videos on hot dogs thrown in random things. Hot dogs in a bowl of pasta. Hot dogs in a bunch of fried potatoes. Hot dogs in baked beans. Beanie weenies. Onion sandwich, tomato gravy, and biscuits. Deep fried chicken skin. Deep fried chicken skin is delicious, by the way. Cornbread and milk. Gravy and bread. Toast with mashed potatoes on top with gravy. That doesn't sound bad at all. Squirrel. Yum. Rice and milk with some sugar. Beans. List goes on and on. I'll have a link in the show notes for you at survivalpunk.com. And I will have Clara's depression cooking videos in there too. Pretty sure that wonderful old lady Clara is passed away. So if you go to Amazon and buy the book, I think the proceeds go to her family. So if you want to support the family, it's a short book, kind of on the pricey side, I think. But, you know, or just check out the videos. The videos are good too. With that, let's wrap it up. I've gone a bit long. I hope you enjoyed this. I had a lot of fun doing this. It was an interesting topic, kind of off the beaten path, but there are some survival lessons to be had in here. So, as always, DIY to survive, you guys.